This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Many people who live in the city are going beyond growing their own fruits and vegetables these days. They're also raising chickens, rabbits, and other livestock in their yards. While having your own supply of food right outside the door of your home sounds like a good idea, there are a lot of things to consider before you purchase your first chickens or goats, including whether raising livestock is even legal where you live. And joining us to discuss the basics of raising urban livestock and to answer your gardening questions are, from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell, Turner Farm Animal Caretaker Danny Loskamp, and Community Garden Program Director at Turner Farm and co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Don, Sarah, Danny, Peter, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
So this has me really, really fascinated, Danny. I mean, how popular is this becoming to raise urban livestock? Is this something that's a growing movement?
It really feels like it. At Turner Farm, we get a lot of walkers there checking out the farm, having a good time, just trying to seek peace. But at the same time, they always look for the animal guy. Hey, do you all sell chickens for backyard owners? Which the answer is no, by the way. But I am getting a lot of questions, how many chickens per nest box and that sort of thing. And it's really exciting to see that kids can grow up knowing that a chicken does not come from Kroger. It actually comes from a hen. You do not need a rooster to have an egg, etc. It's really cool to see that.
Don, are you getting a lot of questions at the Extension office about urban livestock?
We get a decent number. I think there's a growing interest in, that particular, especially poultry, coming into play with especially rural communities where we have small farm operations or just homeowners in those areas that want to grow some chickens, either for meat or egg production.
What types of animals are we talking about here, Danny? I mean, we started off talking about chickens, but we're talking about like a wide range of different animals that people can raise in an urban setting.
As far as for meat or for pets,
either way. I mean, well, if you're, let's just go either way. Let's talk about what kind of animals are people raising.
Some people are starting to get more interested in the rabbits for meat. Some people are interested in pigs, little mini pigs for pets, teacup pigs. You can potty train them. Bees is another very popular thing. Everyone's aware of the plight of the bees. And they are not necessarily going to dominate your backyard, and people are starting to realize that. Ducks. Not all ducks need a giant pond. We had some Muscovy ducks in Georgia. They barely make a sound. Our neighbors didn't even know we had them. There's quite a few different animals you could choose from that are easier on the beginner.
Okay. Well, is there a particular one that's most popular?
The backyard chickens.
The chickens are?
And mostly because they're so easy to take care of. The way we describe it, they're a little bit more work than a cat, less work than a dog. especially if you design your chicken coop well enough. And they have such personality. If you get a variety of breeds, there are very gentle, very calm, docile breeds out there. And some people will go with breeds that will set on their eggs to hatch them out. And that's always fun, get the kids involved. But chickens are really popular.
A particular kind of chicken, because aren't there different types of chickens?
There are very many breeds.
Okay, but is there a particular one that, or just any of the chickens?
There are some chickens that are a little bit more popular with backyard breeders. Your Barred Rock, your Buff Orpington, the solid yellow golden chicken. Rhode Island Reds tend to be somewhat aggressive from time to time. But it's all on how you handle them. Most of those are dual-purpose breeds, meaning they do get bigger. Their egg production isn't as great as some of the commercial brown egg or white egg layers. But Golden Comets, they're a great hybrid sex-linked chicken, wonderful brown egg production. But I like Barred Rocks, Buff Orpingtons, Black Australorps, Delawares. I like chickens that my kids can hold and not worry about getting clawed up or pecked at too much.
Well, like you were saying earlier, that's a big thing, is getting your kids involved and helping to raise these animals and to realize that chickens don't come from Kroger's.
It's true.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And what about goats? I've heard that goats are pretty popular too.
They are very entertaining. I do believe there are quite a few municipalities, and I probably should not be the one speaking to this, but that do not allow goats, as they are considered strictly livestock. But again, it varies city to city, or even county to county. I'd encourage folks to check with their local municipality.
Donna, what are the laws? I mean, as far as figuring out what the laws are, I mean, where do you start with that?
Well, actually, if I get a call from a homeowner looking to establish, you know, urban poultry, the first thing you need to do is identify if they live within a given city limits. And if, let's say, they do, then automatically they need to go to their city administrators or planning and zoning folks of that community, and that's where they need to start, because they need to know what's ordinances are locally restricting or allowing urban, you know, poultry and animals to come into play here. So one of the first things we do is not to have people get too excited early, because they need to make sure they clear this in their community before starting to produce these animals.
And so that's the very first step somebody should take before they start raising livestock at their home, is to check on the local zoning laws?
It is. I mean, those laws can vary, you know, as far as how many animals, if they're permitted, first and foremost, in this particular area. And if so, then you get into sometimes numbers and setbacks where you can have a building on the facility. You're looking at housing. You're looking at fencing these animals in. And noise is always an issue. Sanitation comes into play. So there's a lot of times a lot of layers in some of these ordinances which can come into play for individual homeowners.
Yeah, I think with Cincinnati, if we're really lucky, the city municipal code is available to you through the city's website, and it's a searchable, like PDF-style document, so you can type in chickens, roosters, and it'll give you the information. But it's interesting with the current zoning for city of Cincinnati right now. I mean, there's some specific zoning regulations associated with chickens, but rabbits and bees and goats, there's it's pretty much undefined. It kind of carries under the general definition of agriculture. With goats, for instance, though, it does say that you can't sell goats in the city limits for slaughter. And so because we had a history of a lot of small slaughterhouses here, I know the city's sensitive to, you know, wanting to have some kind of control over what goes there. But the city's ordinance for chickens is a common sense ordinance, and it's based on nuisance. Like, if you're not creating a nuisance for your neighbors, basically you can have chickens. It doesn't say how many. It doesn't say whether you can have a rooster or not. Now, with the code that they're looking at revising, they're starting to put numbers, and it says on there no roosters. And I think that's a huge mistake. I mean, the system they have right now works and is very open. And it's very practical. For instance, it's set up so that you don't create a nuisance by attracting rats or rodents or noise, smell. It's all things that are very practical to be courteous to your neighbor, to your own family, and also to ensure the animal's welfare. I think that we can make a mistake when we try and become too much of a bean counter. In particular, I think, too, people that have five or more chickens, particularly if you have eight or more, I mean, to have a rooster is actually pretty important. It's not that you're trying to breed or have fertile eggs.
Do you necessarily have to have a rooster, though, Peter?
No, you don't have to have a rooster. I mean, particularly if you just want eggs, if you're not trying to breed. But a rooster also brings order to the chicken yard. You know, he kind of protects the chickens, for one thing, from other predators. And also, gathers all the ladies up at night and takes them into the hen house. It serves a real function. And I think particularly for families having it, I mean, it really shows you, it teaches you about the natural order of the world. It's a really good thing to have.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Tom in Evendale. Hi, Tom.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. I appreciate this program. Very timely. A friend of mine who lives in the western part of the city got a pet pig, which she mistakenly thought was a miniature, And it has now turned out that this pig probably weighs more than 300 pounds and is now living in her backyard. And she would like to get rid of it. She's going to have her own baby soon. And we have no idea how to get rid of this poor pig, whether to have it slaughtered. It's 3 years old, and it's just we don't know what to do now.
Okay, any advice for Tom?
So, Tom, we run into this situation a lot. It's a very honest mistake. All pigs look small when they are first born.
Right.
Craigslist, if you're familiar with the website, they have a farm and garden section. And were I you, I would go to anybody selling pigs, call them up and see if they were looking to get another pig. Or you could go to Agrilicious, I believe it's agrilicious.org, local harvest, eat wild, and find your farmers in the local area who already have pigs. Or who could at least refer you to a good butcher if your friend is willing to eat the pig that she's probably grown attached to, I'm assuming.
Well, we wouldn't mind to eat it. I mean, the other members of the family, but the pig is now three. So, and that's the thing. I suppose what they are saying is that younger pigs are more edible, but it could be made into sausage.
Correct, yes. Wonderful sausage, yeah. Even if it's a potbelly pig, a lot of people say you can't eat potbelly pigs. With the right seasonings, everything tastes good.
This is not a potbelly pig.
Okay.
But thank you. Thank you so much. We'll look into all of that. Agrilicious, Local Harvest, Eat Wild, Craigslist. Okay.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it. Anybody else got any advice for Tom?
Well, just on the idea of harvesting animals, chickens after a certain point will not be that productive in terms of laying eggs. And you can butcher them themselves, or there are places you can take them to be butchered. And a older hen, people think, oh, that's tough, you don't really want to eat it. Well, it's actually a superb bird for making stocks, like your broths. And so I think that's something to be really cognizant of. How long, will you be keeping the chickens? And there is a natural life cycle. We've had a couple of people call us and say, oh, do you want our chickens to stop laying? And I kept thinking, why would we want a bird? I just tell them to take it and have it to a slaughterhouse and have it slaughtered. There's a couple of places that do it fairly reasonably in price. And so that's something you want to keep in mind. Also, it's also interesting when you think about this, upcoming the revisions to the Cincinnati's code regarding rabbits. It's listed in there that you're not allowed to slaughter your rabbit, and I think that's absolutely ridiculous, because why else would you want to raise a rabbit other than to eat it? I mean, obviously there's the pet component, so I think that's a real, and that's a going back to Victory Gardens and stuff. My wife's grandparents in Parkerville, West Virginia, they lived in the city and they raised rabbits for meat. I mean, there's a very long tradition of that. And if you've ever had a domestic rabbit, they're really very tasty, very tender. When you buy a lot of these rabbits that are being brought in from New Zealand or from China, they're not nearly as plump and tender as the domestic breeds that you can get, particularly if you can get one that's never been frozen.
We will continue our conversation. If you have any questions about gardening or raising urban livestock, you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolls and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell, Turner Farm Animal Caretaker Danny Loskamp, and Community Garden Program Director at Turner Farm and co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. They're here to answer your questions about gardening and raising urban livestock. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. That was something interesting that you're talking about. I think that I would get attached. That would be my problem. And I think that's maybe one of the things people don't consider when they're thinking about, I'm going to raise my own livestock and produce my own food. I just don't know that after raising something for so long, I would have the heart to be able to either eat it or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't give it a name.
Don't give it a name.
That's what I was going to say. Don't give it a name.
Don't give it a name.
Yeah. So don't give it a name. You know, what are some of the things, Don, that people really do need to think about before, you know, not just the legal issues, but the other issues surrounding raising your own livestock? What kind of things do they need to be thinking about before they jump into this?
Well, it depends upon, you know, their history of working with animals. You know, the welfare of that animal needs to be extremely important from the health standpoint, making sure food and water and housing and exercise runs for poultry. I mean, we've got some great resources that will, you know, take a beginner and give them some very good information about the care of these animals. So animal welfare has to be very important and extremely important as they begin to look and consider, you know, raising urban animals.
I guess that's true, too. You'd have to think about health care for the animals, too. If you're going to raise them, you have to make sure they stay healthy.
In most cases, with good food and nutrition and good clean surroundings, there's not a lot of diseases associated with poultry in particular. So we're not looking like, you know, you need to take these animals to a local vet and have them checked out in those kind of situations. But I think a homeowner has to be aware of the basic needs for these animals and make sure they administer to those needs.
And you were talking about resources. What kind of resources are out there to help people with this?
Well, I mean, University of Kentucky and all other universities, land-grant colleges, for example, Ohio State, as well as UK, has information on the website. If you go and just Google small flocks, you'll pull up our website, and it has a tremendous amount of resources there, you know, that you can scan through and click on and get basic information and more in-depth information on how to care for these animals.
And for younger, you know, high school students and junior high schools, there's the 4-H programs that Ohio State and UK University Extension agents offer. And, you know, that'd be no better way to learn from your kids.
And also, you know, when you go to the farmer's market and you're buying the eggs or, you know, you go on these farm tours this upcoming summer, you know, see what the farmer is doing, ask them questions, you know, do your research before you invest in doing this at your home.
Yeah. And also, along the lines of a cautionary tale, chickens have a lot of predators. You have hawks, you have snakes, black snakes, you have raccoons, even possums will get in there and tear them up. In some areas, there's even, you know, weasels. So you want to make sure that your pen or your cage is secure and that you do need to monitor the animals. And also, it's a livestock, too. It's like a cat or a dog. You can't just leave them for days at a time. You need to check in with them. I mean, with chickens, you want to harvest the eggs every morning, but then also check and make sure everybody's gone in and is safe at night. So, you know, there comes with it some responsibility.
And even in the wintertime, you know, you have to think about that, too. You don't want their water to freeze up. Yeah. You're going to have to heat it up and make sure that there's protection and heat source for that. And making sure, you know, you don't cause any fires. I've heard about that before. You know, someone not doing it correctly and the pen just went in flames. So you want to make sure that you have all that correct as well. You think about the wintertime, they're not going to come inside with you.
Yeah. And I think when you're buying livestock, too, whether it be ducks or chickens or whatever, I mean, remember that, you know, there's a certain life cycle that these animals have. And you need to be prepared to what you're going to do with them at the end. I mean, like the woman who unfortunately bought a large hog. I mean, you know, you just do your research, you know, buy and shop with a reputable dealer so you get what you want. And then think that, you know, are you going to cull the chickens in the end? You know, or are you going to let them die of old age and have a formal burial?
Yeah, and are there certain dog breeds that work best when you're trying to raise chickens, rabbits, other livestock? Are there certain ones that are better or worse with livestock?
I mean, I've seen that a lot of labs aren't that good with chickens, but it all depends on the specific dog, how he's trained, he or she is trained. Of course, there's the livestock guard dog breeds, but those typically need a lot more space, like your Great Pyrenees. And even within that breed, they need to be raised as a puppy around chickens. Chickens is the main thing. Some dogs are fine with goats and sheep. It all depends on how it's raised and the environment.
513-419-7100 if you have any questions about gardening or about urban livestock. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kathy emailed, and she wondered if you could talk about good companion plants for chickens. She has two golden comets and two silver, and you might have to help me with this one, Danny. I'm not sure the spelling of this. Wyandotte chickens?
Wyandottes. Beautiful, beautiful chickens.
Okay, Wyandotte, yes. So are there good companion plants that to go along with raising chickens?
I mean, there are plants that will hold up better, yes. You could do something like a hairy vetch or a clover, things that are typically easier for them to digest but might stick around. If you're willing to plant it over and over, you could plant some salad greens, something that's very tender and easy, again, for them to digest. But what I really stress is to make sure that your chickens can move. If you have them in a run, an area where they exercise, and you leave them on that run year round, you will not have anything left. They're going to be scratching the surface all the time. They're going to be, having a lot of surface compaction, and plants just cannot thrive in that condition.
You know, one thing that when you have, particularly in the backyard gardeners, they have fairly confined spaces, so they will defoliate very quickly. And I know one of the things, our pen area at home, for instance, not at the farm, but our personal house, is fairly large for the number of birds that we keep. And so some grass and different plants survive. But one of the ways we kind of supplement their diet in terms of plant material is we have a compost area in there, and we put our chicken scraps in that, vegetables, kitchen, and also weeds in there. And they get in there and they scratch and turn to compost and eat that. And then actually some of the bedding from the coop, the straw, and goes into that, those turned into those compost pins also. So it's kind of it's a one way of kind of managing it. Now, some people I know will grow a tray of wheatgrass
or
fodder. Yeah. And then you can take that tray and put it in. And so into the coop itself, and they'll get in there. But if you have this idea, you can have chickens and let them run around your backyard because it's fenced. I mean, that'll work, but they'll be very susceptible to predators, particularly hawks. But they may not be particularly bright, but they're extremely industrious and hardworking. They will tear up every living plant in your yard.
And on that note, as we have a lot of gardeners listening in, chickens work wonderfully if you're able to give them a hardware cloth dome-shaped row that is your walking path in between your rows in the garden. You trap them in there. That becomes their run for the day, and they will eat the bugs for you. They will scratch the weeds apart, and they'll do a little bit of tilling and fertilizing while they're in there. It's a wonderful setup. Yes, it may not be certifiable organic, but it's a really good symbiotic relationship.
Sarah, do you have any animals that you're raising at home? Chickens, goats, anything like that?
Not me personally, but on, you know, clients when they call, and we don't have any at the office. But yes, we deal with that. And we suggest to clients when they do call in what to feed them and how to go about reaching out to your county ordinances and looking at those. So I know this is definitely an increase. I will say that some of these ordinances were created, you know, 20-ish years ago, if not longer. And I think, and I do believe strongly, that as this awareness and becomes more strong, I believe that these ordinances will change, hopefully for the better, so that people can get back and feed and live off of their land, no matter if you're in the rural parts of your county or in the urban setting. So again, just be wise, do your homework, and you know, it's okay to ask and reach out first to your extension agent and your local farmers and ask them questions.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And Gail in Mount Washington joins us now. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I have two things that were mentioned that I think I can address briefly. One is the lady who has the pig that's 3 years old, and might like to not have that pig killed. There are sanctuaries, and I know, for example, there's a place called Sunrise Sanctuary up in Marysville, Ohio. I've been up there. It's wonderful. I think that they take mostly, they're mostly rescue place, that they, for example, animals that have been gone through some of the horrible abuses on factory farms. But it might be worth a call to see if they would take this pig at Sunrise Sanctuary in Marysville. And I know there's other sanctuaries. The other, I wanted to address the comment that I think the host made about being concerned about getting attached.
Yeah. That would be my problem.
Yeah, that's probably mine too. That's a legitimate concern because what a lot of people discover is that these animals, you know, pigs are more intelligent than dogs. I mean, they have their own personalities. People discover that chickens, it turns out, are wonderful pets, and they can, you know, they're pretty smart too. And people discover this, so it is a legitimate concern. And I'm actually vegan. And one of the reasons is I think that it takes, especially to kill them yourself, it takes a certain kind of hardening of the heart to do that, that most of us vegans believe is kind of detrimental to the spirit overall. That said, I mean, if I had to choose for an animal who's, if he's going to be killed, whether he would live on a factory farm or live in an urban backyard and have access to the sun and grass and a decent life, I would choose that. It's a complicated situation
when it
comes to killing.
Gail, thank you for the call.
Just one thing.
Sure.
Watermelon rinds. Chickens love watermelon rinds. Don't
yes, they do.
Gail, thanks so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, chickens will eat about any fruits and vegetables. So I think one of the things when you're looking to get rid of and recycle your table scraps and those things, chickens, that's a pretty decent nutritional resource that can be recycled through the poultry. One of the things I would keep in mind, you don't want to put so much out there that it goes several days before they consume that, because you can have botulism, you know, some disease issues there as the fruit begins to decay. So just don't put out what they'll eat and consume in about 24 hours and then try to replenish that.
Hey, Don, we were asking Sarah if she had any animals at home. What about yourself?
I do not. You know, basically I have a fairly large garden. I was born and raised on a farm and have a lot of history of farm animals. But I have 10 acres, but no animals other than 3 cats and 1 dog. So,
Peter, you've actually got, is it sheep?
Yeah, we have 3 sheep. We keep chickens, and we have bees, and a cat and a dog.
Nice.
And does your work translate to home, Danny? Do you have animals at home as well?
I do have quite the operation going on at home with my wife. We have Katahdin hair sheep. We have approximately 72 head, I believe. We have Kiko meat goats, as well as a couple laying hens and 2 beehives. And some livestock guard dogs. To those of you out here listening who aren't familiar with how someone could bring themselves to slaughter an animal that they've raised for meat and gotten to know, I would say that it's a farmer's rancher, a farmer who raises animals, duty to give them the absolute best life they can. So at the end of the day, there isn't that remorse, that weighing on their heart that animal had to die in order to sustain us. We all know everyone, there will always be people who will be eating meat. That will never change. And so I think it's our responsibility to try and raise animals ourselves and to teach other people how to raise animals in the absolute best way possible. I think we can all agree raising hogs on concrete inside a building is not the way to go, unless all you care about is profitability. It's just poetic to see a hog out in the pastures. You can come out and see them at Turner Farm. They're wallowing in the mud. They're eating grass. Most people don't realize pigs will eat plants. They're really neat animals, like Gail was saying. Really, really smart. And they have individual personalities. You can see the leaders. You can see some might be bullies. You can see some that are really endearing. And so please keep in mind, farmers who raise animals for meat aren't necessarily bad people. There are plenty of really good farms in this area that are doing a really good job giving the animal its wonderful life.
Yeah, and I don't know that she was saying that they're bad people.
Yeah,
she's just saying from her own personal standpoint, she couldn't do that because she's a vegan. So,
Well, I think it's hard.
And also, I think it's interesting the question that comes up in this, like, why have backyard chickens? Why raise rabbits?
Yeah, why do this? It sounds like a lot of work.
Well, because a lot of people do it because they don't like where agriculture has gone in terms of livestock management. You know, these big, you know, to Kwanzaa hunt, huge factory farms raising chickens where chickens are confined. Even if they're so-called free range, it doesn't mean they actually go outside. It means they have access to it. Thousands upon thousands of chickens crammed into these buildings. And that's personally why my family, that's why we got into having chickens.
Well, I have to think there's a personal satisfaction that you feel good doing this.
Well, and also personally, not speaking – you know, as an employee at Turner Farm, but personally, I just believe we also, human beings, have a karmic relationship with animals, with livestock. I mean, these are animals that were bred over thousands of years to serve a particular purpose in our society. And I think that I feel very comfortable eating those animals, but I do want to eat animals that have been treated humanely. You know, and I think we need to rethink about, like, how we're consuming large amounts of overly processed meat through the fast food industry and other sorts of distribution points for heavily processed foods. I think that there's a cultural and actually a sort of almost a ethical thing to take into consideration in terms of that consumption. And recent research, too, has shown us that just in terms of health and public health, you know, these heavily processed foods are, you know, are killing us, you know.
Donna, I heard you start to chime in there. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes. I guess when you look at the issue, you know, farm animals versus pets, and I think especially for residential homeowners who may have the opportunity to raise, let's say, poultry, for example, and most times those folks are going to be raising these for eggs. And we do have some alternative ways of disposing and using the old hen, so to speak, without having them destroyed on site and have the continued juice there. But, you know, if you're looking at a family, and especially if you're looking at a family with children, one of the things you need to talk about is, you know, and think about is how will these animals be utilized and prepare the family unit as a whole if you're going to have, let's say, a meat chicken. And understand that's part of the process of raising these animals is to consume them. So it's part of you know, the life cycle of we, you know, who we are and what we do, and you're just an urban farmer, and you need to look at these animals as part of the process of the life cycle of who we are and being able to consume fresh, homegrown food, which includes animals in this case.
And we'll continue our conversation. If you have any questions about gardening or raising urban livestock, you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guests this afternoon, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolls and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell from the Campbell County Extension Office, Turner Farm Animal Caretaker Danny Loskamp, and Community Garden Program Director at Turner Farm and co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. And they're here to answer your questions about gardening and raising urban livestock. You can join us, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Danny, we were talking to Don earlier about resources. Where can people learn more about urban livestock and how to raise urban livestock? And you had another resource in mind.
Another resource that helped me greatly when I began is called backyardchickens.com. On this website, it's really a very comprehensive website, not as formal or as well-researched maybe as the university's websites, but there's a forum. Let's say it's Sunday and you don't have a vet on hand to ask a chicken question. In this forum, you can type different issues that chickens may have, like he's got a black ball on the bottom of his foot. What is that? Is it bacteria? Is it a virus? Can my kids catch it? It also has a page for chicken coops, and it classifies them into sizes: tiny, small, medium, grande, and estate. And not only that, but these people have taken pictures of their build. They give you the description on how they built it and the supplies needed to build it. It's really, really handy. But that being said, you don't have to have a very ornate chicken coop. Chickens, as long as it gives them shelter, shade in the summer, and a little bit of protection from the cold weather in the winter, they'll be fine.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Pat in Clifton. Hi, Pat.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
I am interested in obtaining a couple of beehives. And my front yard is very sunny, but I don't want to put beehives in my front yard. Would I be able to put them in a partially, I have an area that gets sun maybe half of the day. Do they have to be in the sun?
Okay. Well, no, they don't have to be in full sun. I think part sun, part shade for a lot of animals actually is pretty ideal. The thing you have to about keeping bees, a lot of people are keeping them in small spaces, and there are some tricks that you can do in terms of maintaining them, because one of the things is that usually when anybody gets stung by a yellow jacket, they're going to blame you, so you get prepared for that. And because bees generally won't sting if they're not messed with. But if you have a lot of clover growing in your yard, or a neighbor one does, they do like to forage on clover, and someone with bare feet will step on them and get stung. That's usually the kind of scenario that goes on. But you can also there's little tricks. You can put up what's called a bee blind. You can put some taller, like shrubs, or else a piece of, shade cloth. It's kind of like a scrim, and you put that in front of your hive, and then that way there's what's called the bee line. When the bees come in and out of the hive, you know, they'll travel horizontally to get to the hive, but if you have that bee line, they come in from the top and go down. And so that kind of frees up more of the space in your yard, and you know, because that's where another thing is, people will stand right in front of a beehive, and they're in that bee line, and then eventually a guard bee will come out and, you know, bop them in the head. I mean, they won't sting you first, but they'll just fire a couple of warning shots, so to speak.
That's when you're really in trouble, when that guard bee comes out.
Yeah, so
out.
If you have a screen, you have that kind of blind in front of them, and so it kind of keeps the action going up. But I would really encourage joining the bee club. There's a couple of them in Cincinnati, and to do some research. Right now, we're really struggling with keeping bees alive over the winter. There's just a lot of parasites and pests. It's a really kind of a tragic thing that's going on right now. But I do think that home beekeepers can really help, because you're not overtaxing the bees. Most people leave more honey for them for their stores for over winter. So I think that with a lot of these amateur and home beekeepers could, in the long run, actually improve bee genetics and help us kind of build improve the genetics of the bees overall. That could kind of help solve some of these problems.
And there is a Northern Kentucky Beekeepers Association. So if you're interested, reach out to the extension office. We'll be able to give you in contact. And Don, I know you've done some great work with the Beekeepers Association and folks who are interested in becoming beekeepers.
Yes, I mean, that would be, I think, your first contact that you may want to look at is if you have a bee club in your neighborhood and in your county, and connect with them. And you may want to spend some quality time just educating yourself through a club or getting resource material on the bee equipment, bee facilities, and location, and learn about that before you actually maybe purchase a hive and start into the process.
We got an email from, or go ahead, Don.
I think I was just going to add that if you know someone with bees, volunteer. Or if you know any situation where you can volunteer and experience working with bees, you may find that it's just too nerve-wracking for yourself. Other people take to it very naturally, but I would have the experience it first before you go out and buy the equipment and buy the beehive.
Leah emailed in.
They require a good amount of care. So as far as, you know, monitoring and
And, of course, getting them through winter is extremely part of the whole process. So understanding the diseases and the mites and stuff that are there and how to treat and how to be very vigilant as far as observing the hives, it's extremely important to know that information up front.
And as far as having bees in the urban setting, make sure you're just, you know, straightforward with your surrounding neighbors. Because a lot of times, especially now, the city ordinances say nothing about bees, but it will be based on complaints. So just make sure that you are frank with your neighbors and, you know, maybe have a plan and action of what you plan on doing, where you're planning on putting it. Show them, invite them over, and educate them. Maybe they are unaware. So that would be, you know, dual diligence in your neighborhood.
And that gets to Leah's email question where she wanted to know about beekeeping in the city as far as zoning. And any thoughts on top bar hives in the city?
Well, a top bar hive is a different type of hive. And instead of the stacking long stripe hives, it has a series of, it's a long, narrow hive. And so you don't stack boxes on top of it. And so that the colony, there are spacers in that you move horizontally through the hive, and that's how the comb expands. Also, there's no wooden frame like in a conventional hive. It's a bar across the top, that's the name, and then there's sometimes there'll be some reed wood, you know, will be kind of bent to kind of help hold the hive in, but most of them, it's just the bar only. And usually what they use is a little bit of what's called foundation. It's a flat wax that sort of has the printed shape of a bee comb on it, and they just put a tiny strip of that along the top or underneath the top of that bar and drop it in. A lot of people feel that it's a lot better. For homeowners, there are some advantages to it. If you don't have a centrifugal extractor for working with frames, you know, it's a little bit easier to extract the honey because basically you take the honey-filled frames and you just squeeze it, squeeze the honey out. Yeah.
Lee in Independence joins us now. Hi, Lee. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to go back. You guys were talking about protecting chickens from predators. There's a lot of them out there that will, you know, if you don't pay attention, to decimate their flock. And we've experienced it all. We've had chickens for over 7 years now. We've had dogs, fox. We haven't had any raccoons do anything because they put themselves up and the chicken barn is a port dock, so nothing can get into it. But three of the things that we do, we have a couple of donkeys, and they're good for keeping around, you know, sheep and cow anyway, so they'll keep out the coyote and the fox. And I was reading online where, you know, crows are very territorial, and I observed how they'll chase hawks. And so we started feeding them raw peanuts, and they've pretty much taken up residency in the back of our woods. And if ever there's a hawk in the area, they escort them out of our airspace. And then the third thing is, we set up a little, you know, those portable canopies that you see at the farmer's market. I keep those in back, and it not only gives them shelter and protection, but it keeps their food out of the rain when it rains, so you don't have to be scampering out there to pick up their food and stuff. And another thing for hawks is bottle rockets. That'll kind of...
Donkeys and bottle rockets.
I mean, you can't hit them, you know, but...
Lee, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Any thoughts on what Lee had to say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Turner Farm, for instance, they have guard donkeys for the sheep. And but I mean, if you start keeping guard donkeys, I mean, it's like with the dogs, they have to be raised with the sheep, but you're talking about a lot more acreage. So for the homeowner, that's not practical. But I do think that, you know, animals getting in the chicken coops like raccoons and stuff, that you don't want to use that woven garden fencing that has the spaces that are 2 inches by 4 inches. You have to use chicken wire or else like half-inch hardware cloth. because those larger spaces, the animals, I mean, a raccoon will get in there, if it grabs a hold of a chicken, it'll figure out some way to pull at least a good part of it through that hole, and it's a pretty nasty mess. And I know that's happened to a few people. Also, if you're coop doesn't have a bottom on it, if you take that chicken wire down to the ground and then you flare it out around 10 inches or so and then bury it, that when the animal comes up and wants to dig at the edge of the fence, it tears up its claws on the fence and it can't go under. And so the instinct of the animal is to dig at the fence edge. Now, I guess I work with a groundhog, but groundhog don't eat chicken, so... But that's something to think about. I mean, you do really, she said Fort Knox, you really have to think about that because these animals can be very persistent.
And chicken is on the menu for everything.
Yeah, for everybody.
Wow, sounds like it.
Not just us.
And at Turner, for those of you at home, a very simple, easy, cheaper type thing to do would be to use deer netting as your roof. That protects against owls by night and hawks by day.
Michael from Dayton sent us an email. He has a utility shed that has bumblebees in the walls, and he's wondering how can he get rid of them without killing them?
I don't know. I mean, is he talking about like the carpenter bees, the borers?
No, it just says bumblebees in the walls.
Regular honeybees. Yeah. They're regular honeybees. You just need, you know, contact your local beekeepers association and someone that's knowledgeable about securing the hives out of structures, and that can be done, and those folks will have the protective equipment and have the knowledge to be able to do that. So,
Pete's telling me that Michael said these are large bees, so they could very well be carpenter bees.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, and if they are carpenter bees, we want to keep in mind that most bees in general are more active during the day. They're going to be less active late evening and early morning. So especially with our carpenter bees, they will sting. They don't, of course, want to, but they will if you get in their way. So just know when you are wanting to control the wood bees or the carpenter bees, you want to do it late evening, very early morning before the sun comes out so you protect yourself. And there are certain tactics that you can use. And again, call the extension office for more information on that.
Yeah. Okay. And if it is an actual beehive, honeybees, I mean, there will be people will come and get the swarm because people want them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So call your local bee club.
Time for one last question here. Stuart in Montgomery. Go ahead, Stuart. We've got about 30 seconds here. What's your question?
I'll make it quick. I have a little garlic bed, about 100 cloves. And when the garlic comes out in July and it goes back in, the new crop goes back in late September, October, I'd like to put down some cover crop. Someplace locally where I can get maybe a pound of something that'll work in that period of time.
There are a couple sources. I mean, something for short-term cover crops, buckwheat's a good one. You know, can we say names of stores in the area?
I would
sure.
Rather. Okay, day. Real quick.
Okay, well.
We're running out of time anyhow.
Okay,
so
the there's the Northside Grange in Northside and also Fetters and Covington.
And most feed mills that you're going to be near that already sell the animal feed or pasture seed, they'll have what you're looking for or can get it for you.
Well, thanks all for joining me this afternoon. From the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolls and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell, Turner Farm Livestock Manager Danny Loskamp, and Community Garden Program Director at Turner Farm and co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm, Peter Huttinger.